Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna.
Live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lugeman. Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. And some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who?
Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome into Latitude 30 for Jaguars This Week. We are live on the south side of Jacksonville. Jacksonville's best night spot right over here. Bowling, movies, all the fun stuff, and of course, the great food, which is already piled high on the tables in front of us. So come join us for a couple hours of Jaguars and NFL talk here in a very busy week in Jacksonville. And we'll start with the news that Blaine Gabbert apparently took all of the snaps, or the predominance of the snaps today, John Osher, at practice. And the question mark is, does that mean he's playing on Sunday?
Well, I mean, unless something goes wrong, that's the plan. And, we don't get to watch the entire practice, but the plan before practice was for him to take his normal amount of reps, which, as everybody knows, is very close to all, if not all, and he practiced full. So the assumption is that he went full and he took all the reps, and the plan is for him to start.
So, Tony, you've had shoulder issues. I know Loggy's had shoulder issues. Give us your sense, guys, of the labrum, the non-throwing shoulder for the quarterback, and how cautious they have to be, if at all, with Blaine Gabbert.
Well, we've got to first say that we're not sure that it's the labrum. That's the report.
Okay.
And the labrum basically is the cup that your humerus goes up into to create that ball and socket.
I don't find it humorous at all, Jeff.
Okay.
That would be the upper arm, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who have not seen the skeleton.
I had a tear in my left labrum, my left shoulder labrum, in 1993, and it hurts. But, I mean, I played with it. And then in 1994, I had one in my right shoulder and played with it. And I'm talking, 10-plus games each one. And you just deal with it. I mean, it hurts. The biggest thing is that if it's popping in and out, that's a problem. Then you could hurt it worse. But if it's not popping in and out, you just deal with the discomfort. And then at the end of the year, you go and get it fixed.
But even if it's popping in and out, your non-throwing shoulder, you can play with it. It's a pain issue. If that's what it is.
If he gets picked up and thrown down hard again,
it'll hurt.
Is that it, though?
No.
Now the
I don't think. I mean, listen,
we're speculating, but
we're speculating,
curious.
And every guy is different. But having had a torn labrum that was about 80% off the bone and flopping around, going in and out of the joint, in hindsight, you wish you got it fixed earlier. But the position he plays, he doesn't need his left shoulder. As far as to function. Pushing, tackling.
Right.
I mean, so is it a pain issue?
But I disagree with you just from one aspect in that, a quarterback and throwing is, it's an athletic move and the rotation of the left arm kind of coming down in a throwing motion. I mean, it's not like a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman where you're just, you're demanding a lot out of that joint. But you're, still as a quarterback, and when you're talking about making pinpoint throws and it's going to affect you. You just hope it doesn't – and going to bother you, you just hope that it doesn't affect him as a passer and in his routine as a quarterback.
I've never been a quarterback and haven't had to throw the ball, but I'm sure there's mechanics where your left side, you need to use it. Talking, I just don't – if you can deal with the pain, I don't see it being a factor.
Well, his comment, I don't know whether it was to you, John, or to Cole, whoever it was in the locker room today, was, what are you going to do, the first time you take a big hit? And he said, I'm going to get up and take another one. So,
yeah.
If it is mind over matter, that's the first step, is just being willing to go out there and not be worried about it.
Right. From what it sounds like the other day, they didn't know what it was. He was in pain. He tried to play through it. And, they have a 14-point lead, and you're controlling the game. So it was a decision on the coaching staff's part and the sidelines to say, let's get him out. And now they realize what it is, and he's going to try to play with it.
Does a shot help? A little medicine before the game help?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting in that, obviously anti-inflammatories, are going to get taken, and you want to, most players in the NFL at some point in the season are taking many.
At some point?
It's
He said today he doesn't plan to take a shot.
Really? But,
yeah, that's what he said in the locker room.
I think if you can just control some of the inflammation and minimize the pain, you know, but, you know, you had asked me earlier today, Brian, you know, if he takes another hit on it, could it make it worse or would it make it worse? And I don't necessarily think it does. I mean, if you took the same exact shot, maybe. But, I mean, the chances of that, I mean, it was a really kind of a freak thing when Blaine, first of all, the defensive line was offsides, and I was not very happy that Uche didn't block the guy, and I believe it was 93, Tommy Kelly. And when Blaine went the slide, because Richard Seymour had beaten Evan Britton, and then Tommy Kelly had gotten around Uche, in which he was offsides, but still should have been not allowed to get into the backfield that quickly. When Blaine went the slide, you can see on the slow motion part, his left elbow is out, and that's when the left elbow hits the ground, and then Tommy Kelly, right at that point, lands on top of him, and so it kind of jams that arm up into the shoulder joint. And so, you know, I would hope that it would not get worse. I wouldn't expect it to get worse.
Well, and let me add this. Everybody's body is different. Every athlete who plays. And so it's not fair. Jeff has his experience. I have my experience. And
I have no experience.
You have no experience. And guys, bodies are different. Pain tolerance is different. And it's not – and I want to be careful because I don't want to put Blaine in a difficult position that's not fair to him because we don't know exactly the extent of the injury.
Right.
And how, you know, where – because where the labral tear can make a difference in the joint. And if it's – mm-hmm. If it's loose, if it's getting stuck. I mean, there's so many things out there that we think, based on what we know, that he should be able to play for it. I know Blaine thinks he should be able to play right. through it. But it's going to be a week-to-week issue that you're going to have to wait and see how he performs.
Well, one question here, and this is to you, John, in that Mike Mularkey gave the impression that he was the one who decided to take Blaine out of that game.
Yeah, that's – He has certainly
on Monday night on his radio show. He said as much,
and he has said as much a couple times.
So I mean, it was not like the quarterback was saying, it hurts. I got to come out." I mean, so
let me take it to a different level philosophically, okay? And you both have said that if that's what it is, non-throwing, you'd think he'd be able to play. How careful should they be with their young quarterback if they believe he's the franchise quarterback? You know, how careful are you with him, or do you just play him? You're paying him, you play him.
You play him. I mean, if it was a throwing shoulder, it's a completely different conversation.
You wouldn't even have a choice.
It's his non-throwing shoulder. It's a painful injury. It's something that Ed Reed right now is playing with the labral tear, playing safety.
Right.
And so it's not like it's people don't do it.
Well, it's also a situation, you know.
So I don't think you – I think you let him go play.
If you remember, all last offseason there was the debate – should Peyton Manning play again? I mean, and it got to the point with Peyton, if you remember, where it was, I could get hit, but I could always get hit. So there's no more risk now than there was before. And it sounds like this is sort of the same thing. Yes, if he took a specific hit on this area, then sure, he could hurt it worse. But it doesn't sound like there's that much more risk because this exists to have it get hurt worse.
One thing that I expect, and Tony, you can comment on this, but you got a quarterback who's banged up. Those five guys up front had better pick their game up and better pick their game up in a big way. Every play, they should be saying, I have to do everything to protect my quarterback, period. Because you know what? I didn't think they played very well in Oakland. I don't think, you know, there were a couple guys that I thought, I mean, Eugene played well, but then Eugene had a couple plays that wasn't very, very good either.
Yeah, I thought it was the worst game I've seen Eugene play. And then I'm not saying he played terrible, but to the standard that I think we expect.
His two plays were costly.
Well, I agree, but I'm saying, yeah, I agree. Well. And I agree, just following up on what Jeff said, I think, listen, one thing is for sure that if you have a guy out back there who's battling and you know he's hurt and he's fighting through pain, as an offensive lineman, you respect that, first of all, and you want to fight for that guy because you know he's in there fighting with you. And then the responsibility, listen, I'll take it a step further than Jeff. I don't care if the guy's healthy or not. It was embarrassing to me when my guy hit the quarterback. You have to, as an offensive lineman, watching the film, it was embarrassing when I watched whether it was my guy, it was worse when it was my guy, but as a unit, watching Mark get hit, and if he was getting beat up, I was embarrassed for how we played, and it was hard for me to, leaving that meeting room knowing that my job and our job up front is to protect that guy. And if we don't do it, that's not good enough. And I, and so you have to have some pride. And I agree with Jeff. I didn't think the, I mean, I didn't think they played very well as a unit. I don't think the run blocking was very well executed and at all. And that was obvious. We couldn't run the ball at all. And then the quarterback's getting to hit too much. You can't let the guy get hit like that.
That play really bothered me, that Blaine got hit, because Tommy Kelly was offside, but he was blockable. It's not like he was past Uche. Uche was late off the snap because he was worried about himself being drawn offside. And then Eben Britton got tossed by Richard Seymour, which, hey, Richard Seymour's a great player, but that was too easy. You know, when Richard Seymour can crank it up, at times he can be unblockable. But Eben's got to do better than that.
Still, Jeff?
Yeah, still. You know, watching him. The problem with Richard Seymour is he just doesn't want to do it all the time. But when he decides to, he can play really well.
All right, we're due for our first break of the evening. Joe, take us there.
Thank you, Brian. The 18th annual Junior War production for girls age 6 to 17 is going to have camp days November 10th, 17th, and 24th from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Now, it all leads up to a halftime performance on November 25th. Girls are going to get a uniform, Palms t-shirt, commemorative DVD, but you got to hurry, gang. Registration ends this Friday, October 26th. All you need to do, go to Jaguars.com, click on Cheerleaders, and then Junior Roar. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart, more fashion, less price.
All right, thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate it. Jaguars This Week, live from Latitude 30, the official away game headquarters of the Jaguars. Come out Sunday. It is a 1 o'clock kick. The Roar of the Jaguars will be here. Jackson DeVille will be here. Great pregame and in-game parties. Join them right across from the Avenues Mall on Phillips Highway. And we were talking about Blaine Gabbert. Looks like he's going to play. Took most of the snaps today. We'll get you the injury report here in a couple of minutes. Here's an issue, and the Jaguars have got to find a way now to run the ball effectively without Maurice Jones-Drew. They ran for 183 yards against the Indianapolis Colts. In the three games since that, they've run for 183 yards total. 69 against the Bengals, 60 against the Bears, and 54 against the Raiders.
And one reason, obviously, is that teams know they're struggling to pass, so you bunch up against the run. But as several people have pointed out, that was the case last year, too, and they were still able to run effectively. So as our resident film guys, why is that?
Well, I mean, teams are playing eight guys in the box. I mean, you know, they're stacking the line of scrimmage. You know, so.
But to John's point, Jeff, they were doing that last year as well.
Right. And I will say that in not this past game, because Maurice didn't play much. I mean, Maurice had some opportunities the week before. We had one-on-ones with the eighth guy in the box and didn't win. But, you know, I mean, that's.
And listen, I don't think
the other side, too, is they've been further behind this year in three games, which really limits your opportunities.
Right.
There is that.
It's never one thing. Listen, you've been further behind, so the dynamics of the game are different. MJD is, instead of last year making more guys miss the eighth guy, maybe he's not doing as much. I don't think, and I haven't noticed that like Jeff did.
It's a combination.
So I haven't noticed Maurice not missing, but I take Jeff's word for that. I don't think the offensive line has been blocking real well up front. I think as a unit, I think guys have good games, but I don't think they've put together where the unit has played really good football, both in the run and the pass.
And there were times last year where they, as a unit, run block
were outstanding
for extensive periods, remarkably well.
Absolutely.
Considering the number of guys who were bunched at the line of scrimmage.
And I have not seen that. I think, as Jeff said, in the pass protection, that guys need to step it up. It's no different in the run game. There are too many guys at the point of attack not winning right now, and that's a problem.
Do they change their overall philosophy to the run without Maurice?
I mean, there's going to be certain plays that maybe Rashad does better. you know, than Maurice that maybe Rashad likes. I mean, Mike's a big believer in that, listening to the players, and, you know, I guess he had said earlier that, you know, he likes to talk to his guys to find out what runs they like, and I'm sure he'll do that with Rashad to find out what he likes.
Do they throw more?
I mean, if it's me, you know what I'm doing? I'm saying it's time to develop our quarterback. Let's go. We're going to start throwing it, you know, and throw it more.
Well, I mean, Maurice has been the heartbeat of this team for so long. Now he's not there. If Gabbard's the next guy up, it would just seem to make sense, would it, John?
Yeah, I'm going to throw it all over the yard. But I mean, not 75% of the time.
But if right. there is but one area.
60-40 instead of 50-50. Yeah.
If there is one area that you would think, at least in theory, Rashad could really help you with, it would be as a receiver out of the backfield. Maurice is very good there. Rashad might be a little faster, a little quicker out of the backfield at times. So maybe that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tony really doesn't agree with that.
I mean, the whole throwing it over all over the yard, I mean, that sounds great. But, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be overly negative, but we have the 32nd rated passing offense in the league. We really struggled at times at a protection, from an execution, from winning outside. And so when you say to throw it all over the yard, you have to execute so you can get first downs.
It's tough to just go out and play pitch and catch.
You just can't. I mean, it's not like we've seen the ability to say, okay, we're going to spread teams out, getting three wides, and we're going to go, you know, manage our way down the field in the passing game. That hasn't been there, whether it's the internal clock, which we talked about last week, which I saw glimpses of it better in Raiders. Sometimes it was still quick to the check down, but you saw progress there. Whether it's that, whether it's protection, whether it's blitz pickup, whether it's, you know, like I said, winning outside, whatever the reason is, I don't think you can depart from who you are. You still are a team that has to be able to run the ball if you're going to be in games and have a chance to win.
Yeah, but you can't go forward having Rashad Jennings attempt to be 41% of your offense.
No.
Maurice
I agree. You have to – well, and so you have to throw, but you have to win on the passing plays. That's where the change in percentage of one guy dominating the total yards – how that changes is when you start having passing games where you have more than 250 yards, where you start winning outside, where there's yards after the catch, guys making plays. When is the last time we saw somebody with yards after the catch making a play outside?
Well, Rashad made a nice play. Well, Rashad,
I'm talking about our receivers more right now.
When's Cecil the last caught the ball and took a couple steps into the end zone?
Okay, my point is. Last time was Cecil in Indianapolis.
Right.
You have to have guys.
It doesn't
guys,
happen enough.
I mean, go turn on a game any Sunday. Receivers catch the ball and then
Monday.
And then catch the ball and then they make something happen afterwards.
Well, yeah. And I think that's what's missing and just hasn't been there is you expected Justin Blackmon to be that YAC guy. You know, and
that's
so
he
far
was.
He has not
he,
been.
He and, was in the preseason. I mean,
right.
The game in New Orleans, I remember doing it as part of the film room, and his yards after catch exceeded the yards to the point of catch. I mean, that's what he was.
Is there anything to – is he not being able to get deep yet, is that enabling teams to take that short pass away? Is there anything to that?
Well, I don't think he's a deep guy anyway.
Right. But if teams know that, does that hurt his ability to
get
short?
Well, you have to be – yeah, I think guys sit on routes, and they're not afraid to get beat deep. I think sooner or later he's – I mean, I just go back to when we played here, you had Keenan McCardell who could not – I mean, I'm not sure if him and Jeff were in a foot race, who would win.
Right.
But Keenan not by much.
No, but he'd win, though.
But Keenan would still get behind people with route running, with body lean.
Right.
And he had an ability. And so that allowed him then to work the underneath stuff as well. So if you're not going to be a blazer, which a lot of guys in the leagues aren't blazer – you know, Larry Fitzgerald, now he's bigger than Justin, but he's not a blazer, but he runs.
I've always used the Reggie Wayne comparison.
Reggie's
not a blazer, but he always got deep.
He gets behind people because he knows how to set things up. He knows how to work his craft. And so that's what Justin's going to have to be.
Right, that was my point. I was not saying that Justin cannot get deep. So far, he hasn't.
Hang on, guys. We're going to interrupt this here for just 1 second. Somebody,
what do we got here?
People would like to sing something right here, if we could, please.
Oh,
ready to start now?
Birthday boy.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Brian
Sexton.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
How old are you, Brian?
44.
44.
44.
Wow, you're old.
You're John Riggins today.
You don't look a day over 43.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And how old are you?
40.
Okay.
Younger than you.
Yep. Yep. But I feel younger than you.
I have more new hips.
My hips
feel great. Right. Shoulders not so much.
Thank you to everybody at Latitude 30. Appreciate it.
Now you have to eat your ice cream. I know you're on some special diet, but you're going to have to eat your ice cream.
I'll eat it. Trust me. Joe.
It's not a diet. It's a lifestyle.
Oh, there sorry.
You're going to be driving a brand new Kia Optima by registering to win Cons
Joe,
Kia.
Comedy.
Just stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. Rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, Sonny's gets you ready for game day with two great deals. Game Day Wings, 40 wings with their new dry rub or sweet and mild sauce for just $19.99. And Sonny's Tailgate Package, a feast for 4 to 6 people with choice of barbecued pork, beef, chicken, or ribs, 3 sidekicks, garlic bread or cornbread, and 4 soft drinks or fresh brewed iced tea for just $39.99. It is takeout only. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot. Welcome back. Latitude 30 for Jaguars this week. Live every Wednesday night at the official away game headquarters of the Jags. Again, 1 o'clock kickoff Sunday means it's time to come down here and enjoy it with the roar of the Jaguars and Jackson DeVille. Hey, quick word today on Daryl Smith. I mean, not going to practice?
Yeah, he's out for this week from what Mike said.
Are we getting to the point now where this thing might be so difficult that he doesn't get back this year?
May not. I mean,
have we heard an update? I mean, of the... Or is it just status quo, same injury, nothing new?
There was sort of that burst last week when you thought he'd get him back for the bye. And this week, earlier in the week, Mike has ruled him out. But there's been no update in terms of was there a setback. Mike said last week there was not a setback. It was just taking longer than they expected.
This is one of those things where he hadn't played yet. I mean, nothing.
No. Did not play in the preseason at all.
And so if he's back, what's the conditioning level going to be at, the risk of re-injury? And the reason I say re-injury, I mean, Greg Jennings for the Green Bay Packers had a groin injury this year, came back, re-injured it, and then has been sidelined for longer the second time around here. And obviously, Daryl, this is a significant injury. I mean, this is one of those things that makes you wonder, is it going to need surgery? Was it like a Fred Taylor's thing where it
just
was torn
there.
Off the bone? Right. And you don't know. But, I mean, Daryl Smith has had an amazing run, though, as far as being able to play the game with very little injury. Probably how many games missed in his
Four.
Career prior to this year?
Very few.
Four.
Four.
Four games missed in his entire career prior to this year.
At that position, that's phenomenal.
So, I mean – I'm thinking he may, if I'm the coach, I'm thinking we may not have him all year.
You just feel terrible for Daryl because, contract year, and he's played so well for so long.
But, I don't know if that,
No, you're right. I just feel bad for him individually as a player.
Tony, how did they stop Darren McFadden without Daryl Smith?
The play of the front. The defensive front
played so much better.
Played above and beyond any. I mean, they went back and played like they did, almost like they did against Baltimore last year. I mean, the front was just phenomenal. And
I agree.
And it wasn't just the starters. I mean, it was everybody that played contributed. The starters played very well, and then George Selby comes in, gives them quality reps.
Yep.
Terrence Knighton, when he came in, gave him quality reps. Obviously, the big sack caused fumble.
But two guys,
C.J. Mosley, to me, was the player of the game. He was outstanding.
The two guys who flashed for me on the defense were Austin Lane, I thought, played an outstanding football game, both on the run and the pass, getting pressure, pushing the pocket. I don't know how good the right tackle. I don't know who he is for the Raiders is, but
Willie Smith.
Yeah, Austin played very, very well. And I saw some explosion out of D'Anthony Smith that we had all hoped we would have saw.
I've been seeing that,
but not to. It was his best production of getting up the field, disengaging from the offensive guard. I mean, the one play he got the field and basically threw the right guard.
He's the fastest one off the ball when he's on the field, and he's one of the strongest guys on the field.
But those two guys stood out. And I agree, C.J. Mosley was outstanding. Terrence Knighton had some nice plays.
But, you know, they changed.
Mincy was more like what you would expect out of Mincy.
How about Andre Branch? Did you see anything? He wasn't playing all the snaps that he did early on.
He
had a couple nice rushes.
He had probably two plays that come to mind, but he's got a long way to go.
I agree.
Long way to go. But, you know, last week when we were doing the show, we had said, well, how do you change? I mean, what do you do differently? And I said, you guys kind of laughed at me. I said, you know, you've got to play eight in a box and be a little bit more aggressive.
Did.
And that's what they did.
They played a lot more.
They really changed the way that they played defense against the Oakland Raiders. I mean, they brought DeJuan Landry up in the box. They kept Chris Pruszynski back in the deep middle field.
And I want to hear how he did.
And I thought he was outstanding. I mean, I really thought that Chris Pruszynski and what they asked him to do was outstanding. He's a guy that's got really good range. And so they just put him back in the middle, and he did play well.
So based on what you watched from Green Bay, can they go and play well on Sunday against Green Bay?
I don't think you can. You cannot.
I know they're different teams. That's why
I know. But you cannot run a majority single high safety against Green Bay Packers. You just can't. I mean, now you're going to have to run some, and you're going to have to blitz. But where against the Raiders, they pressured Carson. They didn't get to him with the blitz a lot. They pressured him.
They bothered him, though.
You better get home against Aaron Rodgers because the outside receivers and that passing game is about 1,000 times better than the Raiders.
Well, one thing you know, you don't have to worry about an 8-man in the box.
And he doesn't miss very often.
And he doesn't miss.
And Carson missed a lot.
Right. So if you're going to play single high safety and basically some sort of man coverage outside – or even a three deep zone where you have single cover, you have only a single deep safety, it is going to be very difficult for the back half to hold up over the long haul unless you're getting home and hitting Aaron Rodgers.
To put it quite simply, you're not going to want to play a lot of eight guys in a box. For one, you don't need to. The Green Bay Packers aren't very good at running the football. And your primary concern is Aaron Rodgers in the passing game. And the one thing, though, that you may be hesitant to do was what you did against Oakland. They blitzed Carson Palmer a little bit. And Aaron Rodgers, his rating and performance actually go up versus the blitz.
That's because he gets man coverage outside and he just tears it up.
And because he can extend the play like Roethlisberger and move around in the pocket and create time. So that's not what you want to do. You want to be able to do it, but very sparingly.
Jeff, I don't know about you. I would play majority two deep safety and keep everything in front of me and say, if the Packers are going to beat me, they're going to have to do it on 8, 9, 10 yard drives.
Yep.
That are going to take a long time, and I'm going to bet that they'll make a mistake somewhere along the drive because playing single high safety against that quarterback is just – it's very difficult. You have to play him like Peyton Manning.
One of the things that really hadn't been talked about much, I mean, what's Rasheen Mathis' status?
I mean, it's limited today.
Yeah, he didn't finish the game in Oakland, and you're getting ready to go against the number one passer in the National Football League with a very talented wide receiving core. And, you know, obviously all the focus has been on Blaine Gabbert and Maurice Jones-Drew.
The official word today, Mike said he expected him go to practice later in the week, it sounded like. But that's
– let me give it to you real
that's
quick.
That's not ideal.
Just a quick note here. He played early in the game against Oakland, but at the beginning of that game, he was limping.
Rasheen was?
Yeah.
Okay. Was he limping late too?
It just got worse.
Okay. Let me read the injury report for you real quick, and then we'll go to break. Derek Cox was limited today with the back. Blaine Gabbert obviously played, took all the – well, full participation, which is the majority of the snaps, with a shoulder. Greg Jones with a hip did not participate in practice. Obviously, Maurice Jones-Drew did not. Dwight Lowry did not. Rasheen Mathis, I apologize. I read that wrong. The groin did not participate in practice today at any level.
And a groin with a corner is tough.
Brad Meester, not injury-related, did not participate. Montel Owen, shoulder, did not participate. LaRon Robinson returned to practice but was limited. Daryl Smith did not participate. You know who's not on here who normally is on Wednesday? Tyson Alualu.
Yeah, he went full today.
He needs to.
Okay. Here is the Green Bay Packers. Donald Driver neck, did not participate in practice. JerMichael Finley shoulder was limited. Greg Jennings groin did not. John Kuhn, the fullback, hamstring did not. Guard TJ Lang, elbow wrist limited. Jordy Nelson, hamstring limited. Linebacker Nick Perry, knee did not. Here's a big one, Loggy. B.J. Raji, the big dominant nose tackle, ankle did not. Aaron Rodgers was full with the calf. Jeff Saturday, the center with the neck, was limited. Sam Shields, the starting corner on the right side of the defense with the ankle, did not. And obviously Charles Woodson is out. So that's two significant injury reports for these two football teams. One more guy I want to ask you about before we take the break. Mike Harris, the rookie from Florida State, came on.
Played really well.
Played nickel, did he? Because it looked like it from the broadcast booth on Sunday. Wondered if the tape showed you the same.
Yeah, what they did is Carson Palmer kind of identified that he was on the field and went right to the guy that was, you know, his guy to cover. And I thought that Harris did a great job. Carson Palmer was thrown to a fullback and Marcel Reese, and a lot of people say, well, he's thrown to a fullback, big deal. Marcel Reese is not an average fullback in the National Football League. I mean, the guy was a wide receiver in college, and the guy has very, very good receiving skills, one of the better receiving fullbacks in the league. And Carson Palmer went right at him, and he responded and made plays.
Right. He had two pass breakups.
Two knockdowns.
Yeah.
First extensive action for the rookie from Florida State. All right, Joe, let's take a break.
All right, Brian. Hey, you can pick up your Denny's Playmaker card at participating Denny's locations and learn how you can win a Mega Jaguars fan experience at the December 23rd home game. There is no purchase necessary. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna live at Latitude 30. We'll be here till 8. Come on by. Love to see you. We'll continue on Jaguars Radio. Well, you can join Blaine Gabbert, captain of the third annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk and 1 mile fun run on November 10th at Everbank Field to support the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation. Registers the team for only $15 per person. You could do so at McKenzie'sRun.org. Brian?
All right, welcome back. We'll go for about 7 minutes here to the top of the hour, take a quick break, come back, and go for hour number two. We are live at Latitude 30, where the food is amazing and the atmosphere is even better. Trying to add to it a little bit here. And, you know, we've been talking about the defense. We talked about the Packers and how, you know, my question back to you is, can the defensive line, if they can't get to Rodgers, can they get to Rodgers? He's been sacked 26 times in 7 games.
Their offensive line's not very good.
If they play the way that they did in Oakland as a defense, they'll have a chance.
Okay.
I mean, but you've got to have that kind of effort from the guys up front.
That's the only way.
That's the only way you got a chance, is that if you play like you did in Oakland. Now, Tony doesn't believe that the Packers' offensive line is very good. I think they're good in spots.
Where?
I think Brian Bulaga and
the right tackle
and the right guard Josh Sitton and Jeff Saturday, I think they're pretty good players. And in the last two games,
Sitton's a pretty highly regarded guy, isn't he?
Who?
Sitton, the guard.
Yeah, he's a good player. On the left side, TJ Lang, the left guard, and then the left tackle, and his name escapes me.
I've got it. Newburn, I think, is his name.
I think those are the weak guys out of that whole group. But, you know, one of the reasons why Aaron gets sacked, too, is that think about the changes they've had at running back, which the running backs are obviously involved in protection a lot. And then Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys where he's going to extend a play and sometimes take a sack trying to look for a home run down the field. You know, he's one of those guys that he doesn't mind getting sacked. You know, so.
Yeah, but 26 sacks and 7, I mean, it's not even, is it 7 games they've played? Or is it?
They've not had a bye yet.
Yeah. So 7 games.
4-3.
I mean, so 26 or 27 sacks. I mean, their offensive line struggles to protect. Now, you're right. Part of it is Aaron holds the ball, and he's going to try to make things happen down the field.
Now, 8 of those happened in 1 game.
And then Seattle's
really good. That one game, one half. Right. That was the first half. And they were overwhelmed.
But they're. I mean, I don't think they're as bad as what Tony says they are.
They're not the worst, but they're not. Okay, I'll put it this way. They're average. They're an average offensive line.
The against the Rams, which I watched that from beginning to end, Chris Long got stuffed. Stuffed. Owned by Bulaga. Josh Sitton, Sitton owned whoever it was at defensive tackle for the Rams, and I don't know who it is. The guy was at none on the other side, Tony, 94 for the Rams.
Yeah.
Had one heck of a field day against the left tackle of the Green Bay Packers. That's basically where it was, either the pressure came from the left tackle spot or the left guard spot against the Rams, and then other than that, that was it. So whoever lines up against those two guys needs to win against the Pack.
Well, and that rotation that they've got, you mentioned De'Anthony Smith, Tyson Alualu. See, I mean, you got four tackles and three defensive ends. Can they go? Can they put Mincy in a situation? You know, last year he was a third down rusher from the inside. I mean, now can they go back and do some of that stuff?
I mean, he was at times, but I mean, if you had an end that you felt really good about, you know, if all of a sudden somebody rises up and George Selvey or
John Chick.
John Chick is eligible to come back. Maybe Mincy does bump down on the inside, but right now, I mean, Mincy's one of your better ends, you know. Now, the one thing I do know is that when Green Bay has always kind of struggled against the Giants, right?
Yes.
I mean, both Giants Super Bowls, the Giants had to beat the Pack.
In Green Bay.
That's right. And how do the Giants play defense? They play defense rushing four and dropping seven into coverage against Aaron Rodgers. And that's the style that you got to hope to win. Your guys up front have to play a great game to beat Aaron Rodgers.
Because
however they get it, you know, however they can get it.
And we'll talk about this a lot more in the second hour of the show. But, you know, they've got a lot of targets. JerMichael Finley is a move tight end who's a guy that has a lot.
Yeah, and he's got a little bit of a shoulder issue, so he hasn't been playing as much late. They've been playing some of the other tight ends.
Crabtree.
But clearly the guys you got to worry about are the ones on the outside.
Jordy Nelson
James. Is a beast. Randall Cobb, fantastic player, and they do a lot of creative things with him when he's a running back, when he's in the slot position. And 89.
James Jones.
Solid player, outstanding red zone receiver because he's got a little bit more size physically. He's kind of a big guy.
Seven touchdowns.
You know, so they're tough to stop. And if they can get Greg Jennings back, which, like I said earlier, he's got this groin issue.
I think he was out of town today.
They could go four wide receivers and play that way the entire game. And when you've got Aaron Rodgers, ain't nobody going to stop him.
They need some early breaks. And you need to, you know,
takeaways.
You need to get the edge early and somehow keep momentum.
You got to find a way in this ball game if you're going to beat Green Bay. With most teams, I would say, okay, you got to get two takeaways. With the way the Jaguars' offense has been struggling, you're going to have to get three takeaways in this ball game and win it. Three takeaways is the key.
So you're going to have to go do the same thing you did last week.
And I don't care what a takeaway, you know, is it a fake punt? Is it a fake field goal? I mean, something to generate offense and opportunities for your offense.
All right, hour number one in the books. Joe, we're tending to break. We're going to news at WOKV. We're back with another hour live from Latitude 30 on Jacksonville Southside. Jaguars this week, folks.
Portion of Jaguars this week is brought to you by Football Fanatics. Now everybody's favorite birthday boy, Brian Sexton.
All right, Joe, thank you very much, troublemaker. 800-355-NFL1, 355-NFL1. We haven't done much with phone calls, and with these guys sitting here, we really, and on site, don't pay much attention to it. But if you'd like to weigh in, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. Linda's back at the studio. She'll let Joe know. Joe will let me, and I'll tell these guys. And Jaguars, Packers, 1 o'clock kickoff in Jacksonville on Sunday, which means we start things with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show at 10 a.m., pick up the network for the Jaguars pregame show at noon, and then kickoff.
I had a question for Tony, and I had this question today. People ask me about Derek Cox, and I watch mostly Jaguars games, so does Jeff. In terms of the rest of the league, where is Derek Cox playing right now? Well, you see more games than we do in terms of breaking him down.
I think he's a very good corner. Is he in?
Rank him. Out of 64 corners in the league.
Oh, gosh. I mean,
put him somewhere. I mean,
he's in the upper 20%.
Okay.
Of guys who play that position, I believe. And if you watch him, what he's able to do, and especially when he is in when he's in press coverage, I think he's at his best because he uses his length and his size, and he has very good speed.
Outside of Darrell Revis, in the last 2 years, who's the best corner you've watched?
Best corner I've watched, I think Jonathan Joseph from Houston is outstanding.
Plays very well.
I think the two guys in Philly, they get a lot of criticism.
Asamoah
and Rogers Cromartie, but I think they're both very good players.
Okay.
Hey, by the way, if he's in the top 20%, I had to do the math because I'm not a math guy. That would put him in the top 12.
I think he's in that area. I mean, you know,
of the top 64.
I'll go through the teams that I've seen play this year, and as you watch, you know, you look at the Dolphins. I think he's better than any of those guys.
They got one pretty good one down there in Miami.
But he's. So make him on par with Derek Cox. Look at the Jets with no Darrell Revis. Everyone talks about Cromartie. Cromartie gets beat a lot. Mm-hmm. He's a big risk guy. He can create big plays. You look at the Ravens. They have nobody with Ladarius Webb out.
Right.
They have nobody back there.
How would you rank him compared to Ladarius Webb?
I think Ladarius probably a little bit better, but I think only from a consistency because he's done it longer. I think where you'll see Derek starting to get into conversations as a more elite corner or upper echelon guy is when he can stay on the field. I think the biggest knock against Derek Cox is he doesn't stay healthy and he spends too much time in the training room. And so he's his worst, and I'm not saying it's his fault,
sure.
But those injuries are his worst enemy as far as being recognized as a guy who you can count on to take the best receiver and play at a high level. I mean, you look at other teams, you've seen the Giants. The Giants don't have a corner on their team that is as good as Derek Cox.
Right.
Certainly not healthy.
Not healthy. I'm not sure even unhealthy. They don't have a guy who's as good as Derek Cox. So the Lions would die to have Derek Cox right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they would love to have a Derek Cox playing back there. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean,
Ike Taylor.
Ike Taylor's a good, but Derek Cox is every bit as good as Ike Taylor. And you might even argue, because he's younger, maybe even a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can keep on going, and we don't need to keep on, but you look at.
Who's the best corner in the league right now? And I'm going to give you a quick answer. It's the guy in Chicago. What he's been able to do, Charles Tillman. What Charles Tillman has been able to do this year is outstanding. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch the Bears-Detroit Lions game.
I did not.
Charles Tillman beat up Megatron.
Yeah, but you have to understand, I would like to see the All-22 and see what kind of help he had over the top so he could be that aggressive. Because I have not seen a team, and I've seen two of their games, one live, one on tape, and never saw – every time somebody decided to play single high and let him be out there, he beat them. And so I'm not saying that wasn't the case with the Bears, but I'd like to see what the back half is because it's amazing how much more aggressive you get as a corner and get on the line of scrimmage and take those chances when you have safety over the top. I think the best corner, I've only seen glimpses of him, is Brandon Carr for the Dallas Cowboys, who came over from the Kansas City Chiefs. I've only seen glimpses.
So I'd take Charles Tillman over him.
And I've only seen glimpses of Tillman, too. So, I mean, those are positions that it's hard to make judgments, high-level judgments, unless you sit back and watch the tape of what they're doing game in, game out.
But that's going to be an interesting conversation that you brought up, John, because you know what? When does free agency start?
Right. Well,
I mean, he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. Derek Cox.
Well, he's
is.
A guy you got to. I mean, you have. So, and I'm careful to say this because I don't want to go down this path yet, and I don't think we should. But looking at this roster and of guys that you cannot afford to lose who are the better players, Derek Cox
he's
is
a
one
core player.
He is a guy that you have to re-sign, in my opinion.
And he's just developed into that in the last probably calendar year, right? I mean,
well, he was like that. I mean, if you watch what he did last year when he came back on the field, and Jeff and I have talked about this, and I think we've even said on the air, that game him and Rasheem played right. against the Ravens, and I'll just focus on Derek right now, was dominating. And watch – go back to the Raider game even and watch what Derek's able to do in run support as well.
Mm-hmm. He had two plays in that game that were simply outstanding. And Reed, I mean, it's not too early to have this conversation because the team has cap room right now.
Yeah, I would say
– I mean, so you could look at extending him now.
And I agree. I think you should. The risk is, though, he's a guy who hasn't been proven right. he can stay healthy. And so how much money are you going to invest in him because of that reason? And that's the risk for the Jaguars with Derek Cox. If you were just making an assessment based on sure. play, then I would say go lock him up right now because he's one of the guys you need to keep.
And is that why you wait a little while to see how that plays out? I don't know. Those are the back and forth of the argument.
Well, I mean, I think that the sometime in early December, I think, is the day where you have to sign him before that time to count on this year's cap mm-hmm. before next year. And there's some accounting
right.
mechanism that kicks in right around end of November, beginning of December. I would probably push it farther, as far closer there, just to see him stay healthy and watch it. But the flip side of that is,
It may get more expensive.
Yeah, you have to make the decision. Do you think he's a guy who can stay healthy? Because right. even, let's say he finishes this year. Well, just because he did it, I mean, no matter what position you do it, there's not like there's a long track record of him staying healthy.
Right.
But that's a premium position.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have enough good players at that position. He needs to be a guy that needs to be that conversation, I hope, is happening now.
Well, you remember that's exactly what they did with Rasheem Mathis. Is they locked him up with his deal, you know, November, before he became a free agent and got that deal done, and it's worked out well for them. So Cox would seem to be a guy that they've got to do.
And if you look at the defense this year, the six games that they've played so far, he has been the best defensive player.
Well, pretty far and away, right?
He is the best defensive player.
No, he's played four games, correct? I'm trying to think, because he missed the first two, if I recall correctly. But
okay, whatever.
He has stood out.
If he's been out there four games, he's the best. He's the best defensive player.
You really can't think of a game where he hasn't made a play where you went, "Wow." That's impressive.
And I always love when you talk to people. Well, Brandon Marshall beat him deep. I'm like, listen, if you play corner, you're gonna get beat.
Going to happen. I mean, especially against a guy like Brandon Marshall.
Right. I watched Randy 2 years ago. It was 3 years ago when Randy Moss was with the Patriots. I saw him run by Darrell Revis and score a touchdown. Does that mean Darrell Revis is a bum?
Oh, right. He's terrible.
I mean, Darrell Revis is the best corner in football.
Right, he's a bum.
By the way, if I'm not mistaken, Marshall had 12 catches and 11 of them were in front of Cox, and it was only that one that he got over the top.
Mm-hmm.
No,
they were all in front. He kept him in front. He played well, and then
of them were in zone. I mean, you can't make a judgment if a guy catches 11 balls that unless the defense is man defense where they're mirroring receivers and one corner's responsible, then you can make a judgment. But in a situation where you're playing cover two, you're playing cover three, you're playing some man, I mean, who knows why they catch him? If the guy's in the slot and he's working on the nickel, I mean, that's not Derek Cox's fault, or that's not his responsibility. And so you have to look at the entire game to make those assessments. From what I have seen watching the tape, Derek Cox is playing at a high level. He needs to stay healthy, but he is a guy I believe that you can win with and you need on this ball club.
All right, Joe, I think we're ready for our break, and we'll take it live from Latitude 30 and come back with 45 more minutes of Jaguars this week.
Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better.
All right, welcome back to Latitude 30, live every Wednesday night with Jaguars This Week.
Hey, well, I just said this. And
You actually brought up a good point.
Just to say something.
Imagine
about
that.
Stop the show.
The corner position. And we were talking about how good the Houston Texans corners are, Kareem Jackson and Jonathan Joseph. And you also talked about Charles Tillman, how well he's playing. It's really easy. Not easy. It's much easier to play corner if you have four guys up front beating the, you know what out of the opposing quarterback. And Houston Texans, they beat quarterbacks. The Chicago Bears, they beat quarterbacks.
Because a half second in the secondary
makes – it's night and day.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. No corner can cover man-to-man for, what, 4.5, 5 seconds.
Could you imagine how much better
– this game, besides him, I haven't seen
right.
many.
How much better Derek Cox would look if you had a front that was, you know, at that Green Bay level or Houston Texan level where you're at 20-something sacks now.
When you talk about the Houston Texans team, I did that Ravens game this week, and they just
– they dominated them.
Dominated. I'll say this, though. J.J. Watt, he had a tip pass again. He had like three or three a game, I think, two or three. One that led to a Jonathan Joseph return touchdown for a pick.
That's like number 4 or 5 this year.
Minimum.
No, he has – going into
tip
the game –
pass leading to an interception.
When that one happened,
right,
I think
right.
that was his – 11th pass defended, ninth, or maybe 10th, 4 had led to touchdowns.
Mm.
But I'll say this, and I don't know if anyone cares about this but me because I enjoyed watching it, but I was watching Marshall Yonda, the right guard, did an outstanding job against J.J. Watt.
Well, Yonda's a Pro Bowl player.
Oh, he is. And they one-on-one. But now the problem was Antonio Smith and Carter Barwin.
Well, you know who else?
And everyone else the rookie out of Illinois? Merciless
Whitney.
Whitney,
right,
I mean, just
excuse me.
They were all just
Whitney Merciless. I always get the two back.
Whitney Merciless. They were all. Everyone else is hitting Joe Flacco. J.J. Watt. I'll get. Marshall Yonda was outstanding.
You know who also that from watching the Green Bay, Houston Texans game film, the other one that I thought did a really good job on J.J. Watt was Josh Sitton, the right guard for the Green Bay Packers.
But they helped him. I watched that tape as well. They helped him with the back.
I like him a little bit.
Green Bay did, the way they helped him, instead of the back going out and shipping the ends, the back got right in.
The tight ends. They were keeping them
tight
in the middle.
Tight end and backs.
That's
both.
One of the first times I've ever seen that being done.
Me as well. And they basically took away J.J. Watt. They said someone else is going to beat us.
They would have a running back. Well, this is how good J.J. Watt is. They'd have a running back lined up behind Aaron Rodgers, then bring the tight end who was in a wing formation, bring him in motion, and he would stop probably a yard closer to the line of scrimmage than the fullback and an offset eye would typically line up at.
And just make sure that
– to help those two guys in the middle.
Yeah.
So they were either doubling Antonio Smith with that tight end and the guard – and then doubling J.J. Watt with the center and the guard doing the other way, or they would flip-flop that. I mean, that's an amazing compliment. And it worked, of course, because, sure. Green Bay Packers dominated that ball game.
Well, and the reason that it worked is they were able to max protect, they protected with 60 almost the entire game the Packers did against the Texans. Only had 3 guys out. Every once in a while, 4, but the 3 guys who got out, 1.
Right.
They had 3 guys in Cobb and James Jones and Jordy Nelson who won. And then you have Aaron Rodgers back there with a bunch of time finding people.
Hey, maybe that technique works this week to help with Clay Matthews.
Yeah, well, getting into that, I mean, Eugene, who I have thought has played very well this year, I thought his sets, I was worried about looking at his past sets this week. I thought they weren't his best. And he's going to have to improve that and get back to what he was doing earlier in this year because this will be his biggest test. Clay Matthews is an outstanding pass rusher. He is, in my opinion, I know Jeff loves Jared Allen. Clay Matthews.
Well, I love Jared Allen's
Clay
from
Matthews,
last year.
Clay
Matthews. I haven't seen him much this year except for one game.
Clay Matthews is a better pass rusher than Jared Allen. And this will be a great test. This will be the best pass rusher that Eugene's faced this year.
Sounds like Jeff has a thought on that.
On Clay Matthews?
Well, on him being much better than Jared Allen.
No, I didn't say much. Just
all right. I mean, obviously his numbers are way better, but he's had 6 sacks in 2 games. And then you take a look at the remaining 5 games.
Watch what he do.
And he's only had, he's had 3 in the remaining 5. Right. I don't say only.
Right.
But, Jeff, look what pretty good. In the game where he had no sacks against the Houston Texans,
he was a factor.
He was a factor. He harassed
he's a really
Matt
good Schaub player.
The entire day. He gave Duane Brown, a Pro Bowl left tackle, who I think is better. Duane Brown's a good player. Don't get me wrong, but I think
A really good player.
Eugene's everybody is good. But that he gave him all he wanted and more. And he was all over. So this is going to be – and that was at home. This is going to be on the road. Snap count's going to be an issue with the sound, with the noise. Eugene is going to have to play his best game. But if he will trust his technique and set well, he can beat Clay Matthews.
I think he can handle Clay Matthews.
I do, too.
But there's an issue. Matthews isn't always going to be going up against Eugene Monroe.
He spends most of the time there, though.
He spends most of his time there, but not all of it. I mean, they line him up as an inside linebacker. They line him up occasionally
left end.
Yeah,
they all better be ready.
Which is another reason why you've got to somehow get a lead and not let it get out of control. You don't want to be 10 points down against anybody, but especially against a guy like this.
Let me say this. I know that Clay Matthews, if he can do his game, which he's a pass rusher.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff,
he's nowhere near James Harrison on the downs that aren't obvious passes.
Right.
James Harrison is a bulldog every down.
A couple years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, last time I saw him, he was.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a while.
But, Jeff, would you agree with Clay Matthews, though, if you don't set properly and do good, he'll make you look bad.
Oh, he'll make you look terrible.
Yeah.
But
now, if Eugene, he's just got to trust his technique and go do it.
I really believe this. I think Eugene can handle him as long as he's not having to block him from 14, 17 points down and you're having to throw the ball every time.
Yeah, but I agree. But I also think Eugene, even in obvious passing situations, when I've watched Eugene and he does his technique and sets well, I'm of the opinion he can block anybody.
I don't think there's a whole lot besides Clay Matthews without B.J. Raji. That's what I think about their pass rush.
I think that's fair.
Their first-round pick from USC.
He's hurt.
Perry.
He's hurt.
Nick Perry has had a knee.
He got the knee against Houston where they chop-blocked him.
Yep, and inactive this past game.
Yep.
Looking at the other guys inside, Jarrell Worthy is a guy that –
rookie from Michigan State.
Shown flashes. What's the Pickett? Ryan Pickett?
Yep. Just a guy.
Yeah, he's a guy. He's a veteran guy that they got confidence in. You know, so I don't – to me, if you get to an obvious passing down, you worry about Clay Matthews. If they don't have Nick Perry back, and even if they do, you don't worry too much about anybody else. Now, B.J. Raji is a guy you would worry about. And if you have Clay Matthews, B.J. Raji, Nick Perry all together, it's different.
But the biggest issue this Packers defense is going to have this week is no Charles Woodson. It's a very young secondary because they revamped it. The defensively had some issues, and he is the guy that gets everyone lined up. He's the guy they like to blitz. He's the he can play the nickel linebacker. He can play the safety. He can play the
corner.
Nickel. He can play it all. And with him out, that's a huge void just from a leadership and getting the secondary in the right position.
I was telling Brian this earlier today because he was asking me about Charles Woodson. You know, he's in his 15th year. And what year is this for Ray Lewis? Just
17.
17. So, you know, Ray Lewis over the last couple of years, you can be honest about Ray Lewis and say he's lost a step. He's not nearly the same player. He's still a, you know, decent player, but he's not Ray Lewis of old. When you watch Charles Woodson play the game still now, you might say he's just as good as he's ever been in his 15th
but
year.
But different.
But he's just – exactly. He's different.
He's not a guy that you're going to line up on the corner and say go play man all day.
Right.
But what I saw – I think it was against Houston. He was playing – it looked like he was either playing the nickel. It was a hybrid defense or the nickel linebacker. But he played leverage on the tight end in the run game.
And can do it.
Like he was a linebacker.
Which is an amazing thing, because when he first came into the league, it wasn't like early in his career he was a guy that everybody said, best cornerback in football. I mean, he was good, but he's had an amazing career.
He is a great
player. Can you believe they let him go?
Maintaining being really, really, really good in a lot of different ways.
He is a great player.
How did they let him go in Oakland?
They're the Raiders.
I mean,
but you remember when he was in Oakland, it wasn't like his first few years you were like, I think they had pro every year, I mean,
I think it was a contract. I think it was a contract issue. He wanted a lot more money, and they didn't give it to him in Green Bay Wood or something along those lines.
That's amazing, though. I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Fame player.
He is a Hall of Famer.
They just
let him to have a free agent be that good.
They let him walk out the door.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, time for news at the bottom of the hour.
All right, Brian. Bueller's Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller's Swiss Watches, available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, the Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today.
All right. We've got 24 more minutes of this program, and obviously we'll take a good look at other games around the National Football League in the final segment. We talked a lot about – go ahead. We talked a lot about the Packers already.
Well, the one thing we haven't really touched on, and listen, it's an uphill climb. It's uphill sled.
You could argue it's steep.
But what, Jeff?
Can we put some dogs in front of that sled?
Well, let's hope we get some dogs in front of the sled. Jeff, give me the game plan defensively, and I'll talk about the offense in a second, but defensively, give me your game plan to stop so that the Jaguars come away Sunday with a victory.
Because Jeff's winging it offensively. We've already established that.
We're throwing it around the yard.
He's just chucking it around the yard, yeah. Which,
defensively, like kind of what I said before, I mean, you can't bring a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. If you do, he's going to make you pay. The guys up front have to play well. I'm going to mix the coverages up, but I'm going to play a lot of cover too. That's kind of it. But, you know, the interesting thing, and John and I were just talking during a break, offensively, and we'll get your game plan in just a second, but what do you do with LaRon Robinson now being cleared from the medical doctors, and you've had Cecil Shorts in that role, played pretty well, had a couple bad plays, obviously, at Oakland.
But showed the ability to get open.
But every game, and then again against Oakland, he had two other opportunities in that game that could have been six. So what do they do when they get LaRon Robinson back in the mix and Cecil Shorts playing well, and out of all the wide receivers, the one that's really not doing a lot yet is Justin Blackmon. You know, to me, that's interesting. And Cecil played Justin's – he was backing up Justin.
So, you want me to answer that now? Because
I'm not looking for an answer
I'll
yet.
I'll give you an answer in a second. But tell me what the defense has to do to win. Not just –
I did.
Game, no,
Three takeaways. But the hypothetical – I mean, I'm posing
I'll
that
tell you
question.
Exactly what I would
Hold
do.
Hold on. I'm just getting – because, you know, I want to say this too, though, about Justin Blackmon. You know, when you typically see a receiver struggling and not doing things the right way, when the ball doesn't get to them, they pout, they don't block, they look terrible, the body language is ugly.
To Justin's credit, he has not done that.
I give him a lot of credit because
he's still blocking.
He's blocking like you would expect one of the better wide receivers to do in the league, but I know that's not what they want him to do. He's supposed to be their catch ball, but still – his body language is good.
He's not pouting.
You know, so I give him credit for that.
And they still like the way he's working during the week. I mean,
so to answer the question, Cecil Shorts.
Coach Pacelli, what are you going to do?
I'm keeping Cecil Shorts on the field.
How?
I would keep him.
If you're going to wing it around the yard, it's three wide, right?
If no. If LaRon is the only position LaRon is comfortable in is the X. And he is cleared to play. I put him back at X, and I would start Cecil over Justin and bring Justin in on three wides. Right now, you have to put your most productive players on the field, and Cecil Short has to be on there. He is the most explosive player out of all the receivers we've seen so far. If you want to work LaRon in slowly this week, I would start Cecil at the X. I'd start Justin at the Z. And then bring on three wides because Cecil, you know, Justin has shown to be able to play the slot.
Right,
move Justin inside and put
that Cease makes outside. More sense.
That's what I would do. Whatever you want to do, wherever you are comfortable with LaRon, I'm not.
I like your second idea because I wouldn't want to do your first idea because you just told your young wide receiver you've been working really well the last couple weeks in practice, and then all of a sudden he doesn't start.
Plus, you just don't want to do Tony's idea.
Well, no, I like Tony's idea, but his second idea.
Right. No, I guess my point is, Jeff, at this point in the of where I'm at right now, is just give me the best guys on the field.
Right.
And so if you think LaRon Robinson is your best receiver, you gave him that deal and he's your number one. I don't know what they feel. I don't know how he's practiced. I've not been there. But as a coaching staff, if that's how you feel that he needs to start and Cecil Shorts needs to be other guy and you work Justin in because you're going to be a lot of three wides anyways and he's going to get plenty of reps. If you need to baby LaRon up as far as working back into playing shape, then you start Cecil and Justin. So I don't know the answer, what the exact rotation is, because I don't know how they feel about LaRon. But
I know how I feel about LaRon.
I know how you feel, but
I'm
Jeff,
concerned.
I understand that, but it goes back to your.
We're talking three head issues this year.
No, I agree about that. But I'm going back to what you said about the defense. Go put the best guys on the field and make them earn their time.
We're at that point of the season.
Cecil Shorts, in my opinion, has
earned
that.
He's earned the right.
So that's how I'd handle the receivers. If I'm calling plays and getting a game plan, you have to still establish the run if you want to beat the Packers. Because if you come out and start saying, we're going to throw it around the yard because we
sling
don't have
it.
We're
going
to sling it as Jeff Logman told us to, because we don't have Maurice Jones-Drew, you could find yourself down 21-0 really quick because you get a couple quick three and outs and you give them the ball and you don't get anything going offensively and you don't start trying to control the clock a little bit, that is a recipe for disaster. You have to shorten the game. And it's not like the Packers are great against the run.
That's what the Rams did.
The Packers aren't great against the run. They're okay, but they're not great. They're not dominant.
Right now, they're not even – to me, I would say they're below average.
And they expect to get the lead and rush the passer.
Exactly right. So if I am
– So they're like the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, it's
– I would get – I tell
– Not quite to that extreme.
I would tell Rashad –
Not quite to that – you know, because the old Colts were –
Sure.
You saw it in heyday. That was a front-running team, you know, with Freeney, Mathis, and
right.
Peyton Manning.
But so you have
– The Packers are capable of a little bit better than that, a lot more than that on defense.
Here's the number.
You
got to
run the ball.
4.9 per carry.
You got to run the ball. You got to get Rashad going. Toasted, you got to get him up to speed. I like how he ran the ball in the preseason. He showed some flashes, I think we all thought.
And then throw it around the yard.
And then mix in your play-action pass. I think I'd like to see us throw on first down to keep him off. But it still has to be 55 pass, 45 run, or 50-50 if you want to beat the Packers. And what has to happen is the three turnovers that defense gives you, you have to turn them all into points.
Which they haven't been doing.
Exactly right.
Touchdowns.
Yes.
Not field goals.
No.
Which they have
field goals. And when you get in the red zone, you have to – if you get in the red zone – heck, I'll even say against the Packers, if you get inside the 30, you got to put 7 on the board because touchdowns
– They didn't do that last week.
That
hurt.
That ended up hurting them.
You had the muff punt. You had the onside kick. You had the Terrence Knighton sack-caused fumble that you recovered.
Which could have just – You know, put a knife in.
Well, put a slam the door.
Well, and you also had the special teams. Spurlock's 28-yard return. It wasn't inside the 30.
Gave
it was
midfield.
The 39. No, 39. It was a 39-yard.
So you had to score touchdowns. But I think it would be a very bad idea to all of a sudden decide that we're going to go fun and gun and spread it out.
My term was relative. My term was relative in that when I say slinging around
Jeff
the yard.
Sling it, Logaman.
I'm talking slinging around the yard compared to what the Jaguars
But,
are.
Jeff, you got to run the ball.
But you know what I mean. I don't expect them to go to five wides and just start throwing it.
No, but I mean,
you got to increase the number of passes.
And I know this is old as an old theory that has been around forever. You know, the best defense against Aaron Rodgers, a great quarterback, is – to keep him on the sideline. But it's true.
And I'm usually not a big proponent of that, but I think this week is one where you definitely have to run and keep these guys off the field.
So you don't buy into the slinging around the yard?
Well, I mean...
But you know what I mean by it, though.
If you're going to throw, you have to be efficient throwing.
Yes, you got
to
throw a little bit.
Which is obvious, but you
got to throw a little bit. No guy, Charles Woodson.
Guys, I'm not trying to be the but we're 32nd in the NFL right now. And I know we saw glimpses in the Oakland Raider game, and Blaine played well when he was in there before he got hurt. There's no doubt about that. I thought Cecil had some very nice things that he did. But we are still not at a level where I think you can go into Lambeau Field with confidence that we are going to get into a track meet with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
No, so, you're not going to do that.
So we're not going to do that. So if that's not what you're planning to do, the slinging around is not going
to
work.
I'm just trying to instigate you because I do agree you got to shorten the game, but the number of passes have to jump a little bit. You got to throw some earlier down.
Well, it sort of goes back to what we said all year. This team has had opportunities. They had many opportunities against Oakland. Even against a great team like Green Bay, you're going to have opportunities. You can't take 3 points when you can get 7 against great teams.
Well, I mean, and I know we're going to go to break, but go back to the Bears game. We end up getting blown out. What happens if you score a touchdown?
Could have easily been up double digits, which changes the dynamic of the game.
It changes the entire game.
And that's what they haven't done in some spots.
And we got blown out.
Minnesota, same way.
You get blown out against Cincinnati, but early in that game, there's some opportunities that you have to take advantage of in a tight game. We're not – the margin of error for this team is very small. And I've been on those teams.
When you thought in the preseason you have, the team could compete, it was about taking advantage of situations where you were competitive in a game and playing smart at the end, and they just haven't made the couple of plays they needed to be right around 500.
If you just took advantage of them, you're 500.
Sure. And you're having a completely different
And you're competitive in some of the home games.
You want to handle the special teams game plan? Or?
Who, me?
You are special.
I'm special. No, I
don't. I'm trying to put
you on the spot.
No, I really don't.
All right, we'll break, Joe.
Thank you, Brian. The Jaguars Rewards Program is now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Gas Redemption Program, but it's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com and click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards today. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on here on Jaguars Radio.
All right, welcome back. Time now to go around the National Football League in Week 8. That's where we get the opinions of Tony Boselli, Jeff Lagerman, and John Osher. And we'll start with the Thursday night game, Tampa Bay at Minnesota. Not exactly a barn burner, but the Vikings all of a sudden look like a pretty darn good team.
I'll be watching the World Series.
If it was on a Sunday, I'd say Tampa Bay has a chance. It's awfully hard to go on the road on a Thursday.
Who's pitching for the Tigers that night?
I don't know. You know what? I'm going to take the Bucs.
They've been playing well. Like I say,
it's in Minnesota. I think Minnesota wins.
It's been really tough for these teams to go on the road on Thursday nights and win.
Minnesota's going to win. Tampa Bay is
taking the Bucs.
You're the contrarian tonight. Wing it all over
I'm
the yard.
For the
take the Bucs.
Are the Bucs going to
wing it? Are they going to throw it 50, 60 times?
The Bucs would have won last week if they didn't wear the Dreamsicle outfit.
All right, Sunday games now. Carolina at Chicago.
Oh, Chicago.
Chicago. And you talk about a franchise that a year ago at this time was so excited that they took Cam Newton and they were on the verge of they had their franchise quarterback and they were going in the right direction. And yada,
he has
yada,
really struggled since the first month of
that
season.
And forget about struggling on the field. He is almost a disaster with the atmosphere that he has created with his post-game comments and his interviews and everything else, and now firing the GM.
That was not good. You don't do that.
What, fire the GM?
Yeah, I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I mean, you don't accomplish anything.
You fire him after
the season,
but why fire him right now? Yes. But
you just fired a guy who took the quarterback of your future,
and it's an issue.
So what is didn't that kind of giving the quarterback something? You know.
No,
isn't that telling Cam Newton something? You know, the guy that just drafted you made a mistake by drafting.
Well, and it's a team that has wants to open it up with Cam Newton and everything, and has more money than anybody else in the NFL in their running back position, paying two franchise backs,
which is terrible. That was a bad decision.
Bad decision. They have Tolbert as well. They pay decent money to, and so it's a disaster there.
All right, up next, San Diego at Cleveland.
San Diego.
San Diego.
It'll be closer.
You're a little slow
think.
On that one.
Yeah, well, because I think it's going to be. I'm not sold on San Diego, and I think Cleveland.
They're coming off of a win over Cincinnati,
and has been playing close games.
At some point, they're going to win one for a home game, but not this week.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's a whole lot of rallying.
You know, win one for the Gipper.
This should be
win one for Holmgren.
Seattle at Detroit.
Seattle. I like the way Seattle plays defense,
but they're not as good on the road.
Right. Significant. And
Russell Wilson is still a rookie.
Detroit's at half two stage.
And Detroit's at the position they have to win a game. I'll go Detroit.
Miami at the New York Jets.
Miami.
I'm doing that game, so I shouldn't comment. Miami.
But you're going to anyway.
Miami.
Why do you say Miami?
Because I think Miami's
pretty
good.
They're playing
well. I think their defense is very well. They have one of the best run defenses in the entire NFL. Tannehill is really – he's playing good, efficient football. Reggie Bush is running the ball well. And
are
I think
Jets
the Jets
at a tipping
are
point, Tony?
And the Jets are – they played well against New England. They had the game.
Right.
They had a chance to win it with the turnover, could do nothing with it, settled for a field goal, and then
they
lost
just seem fragile. You wonder if they can come back for something like that.
And I don't think they could run – they ran the ball against the Patriots halfway decent. And I don't think they'll run the ball against Dolphins. I think the Dolphins are coming off a bye. I think they get the win.
Now, if Tebow were starting, I'd pick the Jets.
Oh, no question.
At what position?
Doesn't matter. It's the power of Tebow.
Did you weigh in on that one, John?
I said absolutely. Absolutely.
No. I mean on Jets or Dolphins.
Oh, I think the Jets hang in it and stay strong for one more week.
Atlanta.
I'm not sure they last the season.
Atlanta at Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Atlanta. I don't think Philadelphia is very good.
Andy Reid is 13-0 coming off a bye.
Okay.
Good for him.
Washington at Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's a
Pittsburgh.
Good one.
Pittsburgh. They have to win.
Yeah, and that'll be a telling.
I don't know about
that. That'll be a telling game for Pittsburgh because usually when
win.
They get good, they're known to start like this.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
But.
What happened?
He sold me. Johnny sold me.
I'm saying it'll be telling. This is a game the good Steelers teams win and start moving forward and getting good.
RG3 is still a rookie. He's on the road at Pittsburgh. It's still Pittsburgh. I got to go with Pittsburgh.
Somehow they'll win 27-24 Pittsburgh.
New England.
That somehow. That real quick. That somehow will be Ben Roethlisberger.
He is so good.
He is very good.
New England at St. Louis at Wembley Stadium in London.
New England.
Yeah, New England. They'll deal with any distractions.
Until Sam Bradford takes the next step, which he didn't play very well at all against Green Bay this past week, not going to win.
Indianapolis at Tennessee.
Colts.
Boy, that's a good one. That's a
two average.
I don't say it's a great
game.
It's where? At Tennessee?
At Tennessee.
I'm going to take Tennessee just because it's home team.
I'll go with the rookie. I like Luck. Good player.
He is a good player.
He is good.
Oakland at Kansas City.
They should just tie. Two bad teams.
All right, here's a couple of good ones to wrap it up then. The Giants at the Cowboys.
Giants.
I'll go to Giants.
They're not going to lose the Cowboys twice.
The Saints at the Broncos.
Saints.
Broncos.
I think Denver wins that.
Yeah.
Way to stick to it.
You're really good. You get strong convictions.
I'll guarantee you one thing,
you know what?
They're going to sling it in that game.
They're going to sling it.
You'll like that game.
I'm sticking with the Saints.
Sling it, Logman.
Sticking with the Saints because you know why? John Vilma's back.
So is Joe Vitt.
Oh, that's
got their head coach back, got their linebacker back, got their defensive end back.
They don't have their head coach back.
They're interim coach.
Well, it's a head coach.
Okay.
So is the last guy.
Going to Saints. Joe Vitt, big motivator.
San Francisco at Arizona on Monday night.
It looks like Arizona might be on the slide.
Yeah.
Might be?
Well, I mean, they've lost
three in a row. John Skelton, I mean, they're running back. They're down to William Powell, like their 15th running back.
The William Powell.
And I think it's a 14-10 game.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Who won Coach of the Year last year?
Jim Harbaugh, I believe.
Who's going to win Coach of the Year this year?
Right now?
Who's in the running?
Gary Kubiak.
Kubiak. Coughlin.
Harbaugh might. No.
Couldn't you make a case that Jim Harbaugh is also?
No.
Absolutely you could.
No.
I think he does a phenomenal job of coaching in San Francisco.
What about Lovie Smith?
I'll argue that.
About Leslie Frazier.
I'd argue that Tom Coughlin ahead of Jim Harbaugh. He went into San Francisco and beat the
– He did.
Leslie Frazier, if that – if they keep going, team it'll rolls, be, that's a remarkable job.
That team will not roll. Christian Ponder, everybody thinks, is great. Christian Ponder, take a look closer look at his numbers on third down.
He needs to sling it more.
Yeah, sling it around.
He
Locks.
Can't sling it. The only thing he likes to do is throw it within 5 yards. Got That's it, the everybody. Kind of slinging he likes.